Do you think it'll make any difference? She was looking at a full church like this. Do you think it'll make any difference? The pastor said, what do you mean? What will make any difference? She said, Easter. All these people coming. Will it really make any difference for them? It's a good question. To read the gospel story carefully, it hadn't made much of a difference to those who were there. Who first saw the empty tomb. Mary Magdalene, Peter, and John, that's the disciple that Jesus loved. His name was John. That's how the text reads. Each started the day thinking Jesus was dead and buried, and actually, they're pretty much stuck with that conviction. Tipped off that there was something going on by Mary, Peter and John ran there, and they, peering in, it says they believed. But it's obvious that they didn't believe in the resurrection, because it said they have yet to understand the scriptures that he must be raised on the third day. So what they believed, what was it? Just that his corpse was gone. They believed in a grave-robbing conspiracy. Somebody had taken the body. Was it the friends, the political system, the empire, the corporation, their religion, terrorists? It hadn't yet occurred to them that Jesus had escaped that cold womb. So look at the dynamic in relationship. They hadn't got the basic theological stuff or the change in reality. Their relationships are just as messed up as they are today. A scared woman runs to tell witless men what's going on. They won't believe her, so they go for themselves to see. On the way, they decided to compete in a little foot race. John gets there first, but he's going to hold back. He's not going to rush in. Peter comes in. He goes, just like Peter, runs right into the tomb. And then they leave, believing that the tomb was empty. I don't know. If I'd been Mary, I would have been awfully insulted. I know an empty tomb when I see one. More to the point, they didn't say anything to Mary. Comb the text. There's not a single word of comfort. Mary, don't worry. It'll be all right. We'll sort it out. We'll find something. Nothing. They just leave her there. Life as usual. And John helps us with this when he says, life was the day began while it was still dark. Bad relationships, conspiracy theories, that's our world. But the world had, in fact, changed. It was changing. The sun was not yet up, but the Son of God had already been up and dealt a death blow to sin and death. God vindicated his Son. So forgiveness, grace, mercy, love, it's going to be flooding the earth. He was alive, so we too will live. We do not have to be broken by this world. We don't have to live in despair. Losers will be embraced by the love of loves. I was reading this yesterday. Christianity is for losers. How does that feel, folks? Because if you're a winner, you've won. What do you need credit? You don't need to give God any credit. You've won. But losers know that it doesn't depend on them. And that then when they're loved by God anyway, loved by each other and welcomed into a community like that, then they can really appreciate what love actually is. The acceptance of people. Oh, those are great crayons. Tell you what, you keep the crayons for now. Okay. We don't have to wallow in regret. His life, the new creation, heals the sting of death. See, what's happening in this scene is, you remember the Garden of Eden. Eve there, And God used to come and walk in the quiet of the evening until Eve was deceived. Here, Mary is in the garden, confuses Jesus for the gardener, but she's not deceived because he is the gardener, recreating the whole world. Because Jesus is God, is the earth's gardener, planting a new creation at this moment. And he entrusts the first word about that new creation to Mary, the apostle to the apostles. "Do not hold on to me," he said, "for I have not yet ascended to my Father." I was joking at the beach on that point. Why did he say, "Do not touch me"? Artists will have Jesus coming forward and seeing Mary coming toward him to touch him. But he says no, because the world will not continue to be as it was. The story's not over. I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. Don't hold me, because I'm going to make things different from heaven above. We'll need that. He's giving us, life will never return to what it was before. Jesus has a higher calling to create the world, calling the shots from heaven as exalted king. And then he says to her, "Go tell my brothers." That's very kind of him to still call them brothers. After they denied him, abandoned him, walked away from him, he still calls them brothers, calls them back to himself. "I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." The intimacy that he has with God, we now have with God. The same access that Jesus had with God, you have as his adopted sisters and brothers. And he says, "My God and your God." I'm reminded of what Ruth said to Naomi, the matriarch Ruth, dedicating to walk away from Moab and come and join Israel with her mother-in-law, both of them bereaved of their husbands. And Ruth says, "Your God will be my God." But here, this is the reverse. The God I have, you will have. But the point of the text is that not all of this happened at once. They didn't get it all at once. Jesus would appear to the disciples later that night. He would appear to them a week later, and then spread out over 40 days. He would keep appearing. And still they had things to learn. What Easter is saying, what the gospel is saying, is that this whole new way of being in the world and with God that began in the garden awaits you, but it will take time for it to open up. And while that time is opening up, you must stay in the conversation. So will this make a difference? It depends on whether you stay in the conversation. It's made a difference for me. It's made a difference for many people here. It's also made a difference for Jeremy Davies. Jeremy, would you mind coming and telling us your story?
Good morning. Today is Resurrection Sunday, when Jesus rose from the dead. But that was 1,982 years ago, give or take a year or so. When you cross over like zero, it goes funny. So how can we know, like the disciples, like Mary, what really happened? And the question in my life is, how can I know what really happened so long ago? How do I know that God raised Jesus from the dead? Well, I'm standing for you, before you today, to tell you my testimony that God also raised me from the dead. And some of you might be thinking, what? What's he talking about, raising him from the dead? But not physically. God physically raised Jesus from the dead, but he spiritually raised me from the dead. For I was once very lost. I had taken many wrong turns, and I was dead inside. Empty, emotionless, scared, and stuck in a hole, a very real hole. I was dead in my sins, lost. Again, not physically lost, but spiritually lost. The problem was I didn't know anything about spirit or spiritual things. I didn't know I had an inside. That was the piece of the puzzle that I was missing. So how did he do it? How did God raise me from the dead and fill me with the same life that he filled Jesus with? Well, I don't know if this is familiar to anyone else, but he knocked. Where can I make a noise? Oh, here. He knocked on my door a lot of times, and because I'm stupid, he knocked lots and lots of times. He knocked on my friend Tim's door, and Tim gave me this Bible, and it has a note in the front that says, "I hope you find what you're looking for," which was very smart because I didn't know I was looking for anything at the time. So that was one big knock. Another knock was introducing me to my now wife, Rachel, and Rachel gave me two children, but that was a little bit later on in the story. And as I met people, or people were introduced to me, they started praying, and I think Rachel's parents were praying more than she was, because they did. I turned up from Australia on their doorstep, and Rachel said, "Here, Mom, here, Dad, here's this guy I met." So I'm thankful to them as well. Rachel took me on an Alpha course so I could learn more about the Christian faith, and I remember learning two things from the Alpha course. One was I knew about the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, but I didn't realize they were all one. I didn't like the Trinity, the concept of the Trinity, I didn't know about. And I remember remembering that from the Alpha Course. And do you know what the Alpha Course is? Have you heard of the Alpha Course? Yeah? We're running one, actually, starting next Monday. And I'll be a part of that. So the first thing was the Trinity. The second thing that I remember thinking was that Christians aren't as weird as I thought they were. And I thought they were pretty weird. You know, when you don't know. I grew up knowing no Christians. So after, you know, when you've got 26 years of imagining what Christians might be like, I thought they were pretty weird. And they were still pretty weird. But not as weird as I thought they were going to be. And that was important for me. It was a testimony in itself that Christians are normal people. So after God introduced me to different people, I started reading the Bible. But it's not what you think. Because Rachel was trying to convince me that God was real, and I knew he wasn't. So I started reading the Bible to look for ammunition so I could argue more effectively with her. I knew she was wrong. I just had to prove it. So actually, in this Bible, Tim wrote me a letter, and he said, if you don't know where to start reading, start in John. I think that's a good book. But I knew it was a trick. So I started reading in Matthew instead. I guess the trick was on me. So I read all of Matthew up to Matthew 23:25. Do we have Matthew 23:25? And Matthew 23:25 told me something that I already knew but was afraid to admit. And he said, "Woe to you, Jeremy, you hypocrite." And he said, "You clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are full of greed and self-indulgence." And I knew I was full of greed and self-indulgence. Suddenly, I knew I had an inside, and I knew that it was filthy. And the picture in my head was, we drink a lot of tea in England. And sometimes, if you're lazy, you drink your tea and you leave a little bit in the bottom with the tea leaves in, and then you just put it under your bed. And maybe you find it, maybe you don't find it. After a couple of months, there's things growing in your tea. And that's the picture of the cup. I cleaned the outside of the cup and the dish, like I like to gel my hair, for example. I like to shave. But inside, I was full of greed and self-indulgence. And fortunately, Matthew 23:26 told me the answer after it explained what the problem was. It said, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then you will be clean on the outside as well. And that made a lot of sense to me. When you realize you're dirty on the inside, it makes a lot of sense to first clean the inside, and then the outside will be clean as well. So after that, the Bible changed completely and it became a cleaning manual. I knew that the Bible held the answer. If it told me what the problem was, I knew it held the answer for how to become clean. And I found it a little later on as I read 1 John chapter 1, verse 9. So that verse says that if I confess my sins, He is faithful and just and will forgive me my sins and purify, or in my translation it said, cleanse me from all unrighteousness. So for someone who realizes they're dirty, this is it. I need to be cleansed. But I'd never confessed anything. But I knew I was guilty. So I plucked up the courage and I confessed to God. I said, these are the things that I have done that have created 26 years of mold in my teacup so that it's overflowing. Imagine a teacup 26 years under your bed. And that was me, spiritually and in a really real sense, that was me. If you'd met me then, I was the most shocked person in the world when it worked. I asked God for forgiveness, who I didn't really believe in. I was starting to believe in the Bible by this point. But it worked, and I felt forgiven. And it's an unexplainable feeling, but my life changed from that point, and I wouldn't be standing here as a Christian, a follower of Christ, if it hadn't worked. I'd just be, well, I prayed that one time and it didn't work. But it really worked. And so everything else in the Bible is real to me now. The resurrection is real. God is real. He does forgive. And when He says He loves me, I know that it's true. And He says that He loves all of you as well. You're probably familiar with John 3:16. For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him will not perish but have eternal life. But do you know John 3:17 as well? It says, "For God did not send His Son into the world to condemn the world." And that's what I thought about Christians. I thought God was here to condemn us. Christians are here to make us feel guilty. But it was a lie. God did not send His Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through Him.
Thank you, Jeremy. Believe. some of you know, that's Mumford & Sons' most recent hit, right? Dion is keeping up. I don't think the rest of you. You Mumford & Sons fans here? Very good. All right. The first single released from their third album, which has not been released yet, May 4th, the first single is called Believe. It's got this line in it. I don't even know if I believe. I don't even know if I want to believe everything you're trying to say to me. So open my eyes. Tell me I'm alive. This is never going to go our way if I'm going to have to guess what's on your mind. Now you can imagine the scene between the imagined lover and the beloved. But you can also switch it, as you can do with many love songs, and put God in the one who's being held at hand's length, at arm's length. In the official video that goes along, this is fascinating. There's a motorcycle going down, has got a dash cam on it, and it's going down the streets of London super fast, so it's playing fast forward the whole length of the song, and then it finally arrives at a park bench. Anybody recognize the bench? Somebody said yes. Who said yes? I actually know where the bench is. I've seen it. It's in London. You've got a view of London in the background, slightly up on a hill. But the thing is, the bench is empty. This racing all the way through town and arrives, and there's nobody at the bench. See, the difference between this message and what happened at the first Easter is that all of the parties, disappointed that they may have been, distorted relationships they may have had, nevertheless, they all stayed a part of the conversation. But if you hear the events of Easter and walk away and don't come to meet God when he meets you at the bench, not much will be made different. It's whether or not you stay a part of the conversation. Mary stayed, and Jesus talked with her and changed her life. She talked to John and Peter, changed their lives. Together, their followers survived all the violence that the Roman Empire could throw at them, all the way to the point that Jeremy also heard and came and responded because they stayed in the conversation. Keep talking to each other, whether it's in the Alpha course to come shortly, in small groups, in this congregation, across the bridge, wherever. Stay in the conversation. That's where we grow and develop. Don't leave the bench empty. And Easter will make a difference forever. I want to close with this brief little poem by Angie Devereaux. And did her heart sing, referring to Mary? And did her heart sing? And how the crushing pain of loss of one so dear, cruelly lost, did just float away? And how her heart soared like a dove, it swooped and sighed at the chance of one more time to play. And oh, the rush of interior laughter that chuckled like a thousand streams, a tsunami of endless joy. And oh, the beauty in the world that very day, that she would be the first to see, to hear him call her name. And how she did run as fast as she ever could to find his brothers, to save them another moment's pain. And how she did rejoice in song and praise, her feet skipping and spreading love along the way. And did her heart sing, oh yes, my friend. Her heart did sing, Alleluia, Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. Alleluia.